What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Office Hours with your brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones, and I am so glad that many of you decided to pull up. You already know the rules. Once you get here, there is no just leaving. We lock the doors, and then you become locked in. So lock in with us for the next hour or so. Right here on Philly Fridays, Fet Life Station at FetLifeStation.com. And you can also catch us in the podcasting world, Podcasting Verse. Catch us at the True Stories Podcast Network. True Stories Podcast Network. And you get to listen as long as you want, as many times as you want. You don't have to catch the show always live. But I want to thank you all for pulling up again, like I said before. It means a lot to me that y'all do pull through. Man, it's been an interesting ordeal. I mean, we had the story about the young brother last week who was found hanging from a tree at, I believe it was Cleveland, Mississippi, at Delta State University. He was found hanging. And we're finding out that that's happening a lot. There's been a lot of brothers being unalive during this time. And I want y'all to peep real quick. I want y'all to peep real quick something that just came to light. So hold tight. Hold tight, hold tight. I want y'all to peep this story. Check this out.
I took an Uber after dropping my car off, and he told me I wasn't going home. This happened Sunday, and I still can't believe it. I dropped my car off for maintenance, and the...
Well, let's just stop it right there. Black folk, I need y'all to hear me loud and clear. This whole thing about not believing when things happen to y'all, or that y'all be on this, y'all get on this, this mindset of saying you can never imagine times being like this. Y'all need to grow up. Grow up and recognize the world you live in. Understand you're always going to be a target. And understand no matter whether or not you want to partake in the war, a war has been declared on you, black men. So you better start paying attention and get more focus, because I would say you suffer from a lack of imagination if you still live in a world where things don't happen.
Chop set me up with an Uber. At first, the ride felt normal. The driver was polite. The car was clean. No red flags until I got in this vehicle. And a few minutes in after he started driving, I heard him mutter something under his breath. Something like, "These black folks, I knew what I heard." Then he looked at me through the rear view and said out loud, "I hope you called off today." I asked him why. He smirked, "Because you're not going to work and you're not going home either." That's when I noticed something that made my chest tighten. He had a glass divider in a car, like a taxi or a police cage. I couldn't even reach him if I tried.
How do you just notice that when you got in the car? Excuse me. You got in the car and you noticed how clean the damn car was. How did you not notice he had a glass divider between you and the front seat? Just make it make sense, brother. Come on.
So I pulled on the door closest to me, but the handle didn't work. I just figured child lock was on my side. I said, "Open this door, stop playing." He ignored me, just kept driving. So traffic began to slow, and I started kicking the back of his seat hard, yelling for him to stop. Still nothing. So I slid across, tried the other side, and thank God that lock wasn't on. So as soon as I figured that lock wasn't on, or child lock wasn't on, I shoved the door open, ran into traffic, and bolted towards the sidewalk. Cars honking, people staring, I didn't care. Because in that moment, one thing was clear. I was never supposed to make it home from that ride. Not every Uber ride is meant to be safe.
Now, I'ma just say this, right? Y'all have not paid attention to the climate, to your surroundings, anything going on. And you ninjas are the main reason why people still feel comfortable coming for us. Cause you're not on your P's and Q's. My man, where's your sidearm at? You know, he ain't mentioned nothing about that. And he looks like one of these, you know, prep type kids that, you know, has a job. And I don't know what it is about y'all. I just said, this happened. This clip that I just shared with y'all, this clip came out after the incident at Delta State University happened. And we got too many people who think that it won't happen to me, or that that when they're reading these things, or they're reading these stories, or they're learning about these stories, they can never imagine a scenario where they are in that victim seat. He could have been very well the next person we would be talking about, hanging from a pole, hanging from a light post, hanging from a tree, hanging from a bridge. And let's be clear about something. Certain places in this country are still not under heavy surveillance. If you don't live near a major city, chances are there's not, or a major highway system, there's not a lot of people, there's not a lot of video surveillance. And the video surveillance ain't gonna help at that point. With all the video surveillance is going to point to is going to show them how you got to where you got to. It might uncover the crime, but best believe the crime will take place if y'all ain't paying attention. I'm just telling my people now, y'all got to stop taking chances out here in the world. I'm 51. I'm a relatively stout, 6'3". I always give myself the quarter because I'm 6'3¼". But even I know to understand where I am and my surroundings and so forth. One time, man, I was I think this might have been the year Trump lost the election to Biden, right? I was in Memphis. I decided to hang out with some friends, and we were in Memphis. Did Bill Street the whole nine. I had a wonderful time. But me and his one sister was walking to the supermarket, and we were on our way back from the market. And, you know, these cats drove past us in one of those monster truck one of those big ass monster trucks, beeping the horns. And we could have swore I heard them say, "Fuck you niggas." Now keep in mind, Memphis is, y'all know the stories about how gangster Memphis is. Memphis is story about 6.5, about 600K, between 600 and 700K in terms of population. But keep in mind, Memphis is known for going down, and 70% of the population of Memphis is black. Just to run that by y'all. And so, for these cats to feel comfortable enough to do that while we're walking, they don't know what we at, you know, what type of time we're on, nothing. It should let y'all know. And this was, I believe it was what, 2019? This might have been, not 2019. This might have been 21. What I do, no, it was 20 now, I think about it. It was, we were coming toward the end of all the shutdowns and stuff like that. Y'all better, you know, pay attention and peep the times. You know what I'm saying? But, as I often say, and, you know, as I digress, right? Oh, that happened too fast. Hold on, let me try it again. Okay. And I'm working on it. I'm getting there. I'm my own sound engineer. What can I say? We have, and listen, some of you Negroes need to be on this type time. You know, some of y'all Negroes need to be on that type time. Like, y'all need to be really paying attention, man. But anyway, you know, one of the things that happened over the last few months was the advent and the reactions and responses to the infamous T-App, for which so many women comfortably put all of their government ID in an app which had poor security infrastructure, and therefore they ran into some problems. I want y'all to hear something. I want y'all to check this out, right? Because this is one sister who, you know, I don't know the sister's name by heart, but she's always sort of like, she's pro-family, pro black man leadership sort of sister. So I want y'all to hear something that we've known for quite a long time in the red pill manosphere. My bad. I'm still working on some things. Ah, jeez. Where is it? My apologies, family. Here we go.
So I got to give points to the gentleman. They've been saying for a while that 80% of women only date about 20% of men. And I've been thinking about this for a long time. I was like, wait a minute. Okay. So I'm looking at the percentage of single mothers versus the percentage of single fathers. And the data is not quite lining up.
So let me run the data by y'all. Okay. The data is showing about 25% of black men are identified as single fathers, right? In other words, these are men who have had children out of wedlock. The other data shows that of the women who bear children in the black community, over 80% of these women are identified as unwed single mothers. Don't get mad at me for calling the thing a thing. All right. So that's the data that she's talking to, which speaks to the fact that in the black community, you have between 20 and 25% of men who are responsible for the over 80% of single mother parenting. And that's not including the non-black men who are fathering children in the black community, for which the numbers are astronomically high. I believe the numbers is around last time they did a check on that. You can check this out at blackstatistics.com, blackdemographics.com. You can get all this information at blackdemographics.com. But 1.2 million children who are born of black women but not of black men in these single parent situations. So black men have been catching wreck for a lot of things that ain't our fault. But I digress.
Then I started to think about the T app. And I said, wait a minute. Women are posting all the same guy on the T app. And they're all running over there and rating their experience with the same guy. Wait a minute. These women are all dating the same men. Because how would you explain that one guy has like 30 different women rating him poorly? 30 different women have dated this guy and they have a bad report on him. I think the guys were right about this one.
Well, yeah, I would say we were. But we have been saying this all along. But this is when you have these arguments where feelings tend to dominate facts, right? Like somebody's feelings and what they choose to believe will always outweigh in a conversation where someone's emotions is running wild. And especially when it comes to the accountability of it all, we will find that that's typically those are typically the outcomes. But I digress. This is another joint about the T app, and I want y'all to see here what this brother has to say. And shout out to JR Wisdom, because he clipped this up. I'm just, you know, cherry picking off of him.
There is one thing we learned from the T app, is that they love like hood dudes, ruggish, thuggish, like that type of guy. And when I started seeing these screenshots and these screen recordings of all of these hood dudes, I said, oh, I remember when I made a video saying when I was dating, I would instantly get the ick when I found out a woman liked hood dudes, drug dealers, Mr. Shoot 'em Up and all that. I would instantly get the ick. And there were women who were like, that's because you were incel, that's because you did this and that. And I was like, no, you're nasty.
Now, keep in mind, it just shows you the standards that women in our community have for dating black men and then complain about the results. If you guys, the other sister said you have 36 different women giving one guy a bad rating. That means 36 of y'all dealt with somebody that was of low quality, a low vibrating brother. I'll let this brother continue. And then you hear him when he says that if he found out that the chicks went, you know, hood dudes, All of a sudden, he's an incel? Make it make sense.
Think about it. Think about all the type of women that that guy deals with. You're just one of them. And I don't want to mix any words when I say this. I mean this in my heart. I do believe that I am better than those men.
And so I'm a stop it there. But I think that the point he's trying to make, not even trying to make, the point he's making is, why would he want to holler at a woman or groups of women who allow that be their standard? And I've seen clips, not just clips, but in real life, I've had conversations with women who talk about they need their man to have a little thug in them, or they'll just walk right over them. And I just look at that, analyze the level of dysfunction that people become comfortable with. And it's a crying shame. But I want y'all, you know, as we go on and and transition to the next part, you know. I'm getting better. Y'all like it. So, and I want y'all to pick the brother's response. Brothers who get it out the mud, brothers who have taken time to improve themselves, to become the best version of themselves, are no longer settling for the disrespect that comes with dealing with, you know, the women in our community who treat these brothers like they've done something. You know, treat these brothers like they're less than. Treat these brothers with a level of animosity that they didn't earn. So, but I want to show y'all what it looks like to not just have a red pill situation, but sort of a black pill response to treachery. As y'all know, my latest thing now, my latest fetish has been these Reddit responses, or these Reddit clips that have been put on people. You know, there's a whole, there are whole threads on Reddit, which is not a primarily black forum, so you know these are most likely white folk. But I want y'all to peep this joint, man, because I think this shit is hilarious, but I think it's also one of those things where we have to, you know, take a bow to somebody who did it the right way. You know what I'm saying?
Like, me personally, I wouldn't take this level of disrespect.
Check this out.
My wife had an affair with my brother, and my kids helped them hide it for 2 years. Like it was some family secret I didn't deserve to know. So I sold everything, disappeared across the country, and what I did next. Shattered their picture-perfect fantasy for good. Well, Reddit, strap yourselves in because this is going to be a long one. I'm writing this from my cabin in Montana, 1,800 miles from the life I torched 6 months ago. Tomorrow morning, my ex-wife will wake up in her studio apartment to an eviction notice. My brother will discover his truck's been repossessed. And my kids? They'll finally understand that daddy isn't as stupid as they thought. Some of you are probably thinking this is another revenge fantasy. Trust me, I wish it was. I wish I could close this laptop, walk back into my old life, and pretend none of this happened. But reality has a funny way of forcing your hand when the people you love most decide to betray you in the most spectacular way possible. But let me tell you how a blue-collar kid from Detroit built an empire, only to watch his own family try to steal it from under him. Spoiler alert, they picked the wrong guy to mess with. I'm Jake, 41 years old, grew up poor as dirt in the Motor City. Dad worked the line at Ford until his back gave out when I was 15. Mom cleaned offices at night to keep food on the table. Real heartwarming stuff, right? I started working in commercial plumbing at 16. What was supposed to be a summer job turned into my life's calling. By 22, I had my master plumber's license. By 25, I'd started my own commercial plumbing and HVAC business with $5,000 borrowed from my dad's retirement fund, because apparently I was ambitious enough to think I could make something of myself. How naive. Met Sarah at a trade show in 2001. She was 23, fresh out of college, working in sales for a plumbing supply company. Blonde, petite, had this way of making you feel like the most important person in the room when she wanted something. We dated for 2 years before I proposed. Big mistake number one. I thought her expensive taste would settle down after marriage. Spoiler alert, they didn't. They never do. Sarah never worked a real job after our son Marcus was born in 2005. Said she wanted to be a present mother. What she really wanted was to spend my money. Designer clothes, luxury cars, country club memberships. I busted my rear 70 hours a week to fund her lifestyle because I thought that's what good husbands did. Classic mistake, really. But hey, I was young and stupid. By 2010, my business was pulling in $3.2 million annually. We had 27 employees, owned our equipment outright, and I just bought Sarah her dream house.
Now, I want y'all to see, because what y'all getting right now is like is the red pill origin stories, right? He was blue pill thinking because we all, you know, in this society, thought that men were supposed to be providers, right? So that's what you see right now. He thought he was doing it all, making a sacrifice. And as we said before, men will sacrifice their happiness for the people they love. And typically speaking, the women will sacrifice the people they love, the, you know, for their own happiness. So this is more of the same playing out.
A 4,200 square foot colonial in the suburbs for $680,000. Our daughter Emma was born that year. Life looked perfect from the outside. That's when I made my second big mistake. I hired my younger brother David as my operations manager. David was 35, 3 years younger than me, and had been bouncing between jobs his whole life. Smooth talker, who always had an excuse for why his latest venture failed. Lost a sales job because his manager was threatened by his success. Got fired from a construction company because they didn't appreciate his innovative ideas. Every failure was someone else's fault, never his own. I felt sorry for him. Our parents always compared him to me, and I thought giving him a real opportunity would help him finally get his life together. Mom used to say things like, "Why can't you be more like your brother Jake?" And, "Jake never gave us this kind of trouble." I figured if I could just give David a chance to prove himself, maybe he'd finally find his footing. Oh.
Now I want you to understand this part too. A lot of times, parents play a role when they do the favorites, when they play favorites with their children. They play a role in how one sibling will look at another one. And oftentimes, it'll create a level of animosity and jealousy, you know, and that's kind of look like it looks like that's what we're seeing here. What we'll see in a minute.
Oh, the irony. I was so busy trying to be the good brother that I missed all the warning signs. David was good with clients. I'll give him that. Could charm anyone into signing a contract. Had this way of making people feel like they were his best friend within 5 minutes of meeting him. But he was lazy when it came to actual work. Would disappear for hours at a time, claiming he was developing leads or maintaining client relationships. I carried the technical side while he handled sales and customer relations. His wife, Lisa, was sweet, quiet, hardworking, the kind of woman who deserved better than what she got. They had two young kids, and I convinced myself I was helping family by giving David stability. For 8 years, I carried that business while David took credit for the sales he closed. Sarah spent money like it was going out of style. The kids grew up thinking Daddy was an ATM. I convinced myself this was success, providing for my family, building something lasting. Then 2 years ago, everything started falling apart. And by falling apart, I mean my family decided to stab me in the back while I was working my tail off to support them. First sign something was wrong? Sarah joined an expensive yoga studio. $200 a month for hot yoga and meditation. I started buying athletic wear that cost more than most people's rent. Lululemon everything. Sports bras for $70. Leggings for $130.
Fellas, if she doesn't bring you anything whatsoever, the last thing she should be doing is digging through your wallet. Don't get caught up in this whole notion that you have to that you have to fund a lifestyle or you have to be the producer of a lifestyle. A lot of women these days are moving in a direction where they want a man to, they don't want the man, they want the lifestyle he can afford. So if they don't, if they're not there for you, because honestly speaking, this dude had his own business. His wife should have been working in that business. But because she's not working in that business, that's already a red flag.
Yoga mats that cost more than my work boots. Said she was finding herself. How original. A 40-year-old suburban mom having a spiritual awakening. I'm sure that story has never been told before. The yoga studio became her second home. Morning classes, evening classes, weekend workshops. She'd come home glowing, talking about her practice and how much better she felt about herself. Started doing these cleanse diets, buying expensive organic everything, reading self-help books about authentic living and breaking free from limiting beliefs. I should have paid more attention to that last part. David began showing up at the house more often. Family visits that happened when I was out on job sites. Sarah would mention casually that David stopped by to check on us or discuss work stuff. Oh, David came by around lunch. We went over the Henderson project details. Or, your brother was here earlier. He wanted to make sure we were doing okay while you're working so much. always had a reason, always perfectly innocent. I was working 12-hour days trying to keep up with demand, so I appreciated that David was looking out for my family. What a fool I was.
Listen, me and my homies even got a rule. If he's not home, we don't even like going in the house. We'll sit outside. We'll sit on the porch. We'll sit in the car. We'll do whatever we got to do until he pulls up. So the fact that the brother is consistently there when he has his own family, man, that is nasty work.
The kids started acting differently, too. Marcus, now 17, would get nervous when I came home unexpectedly. Emma, 14, began spending more time in her room. Family dinners became tense affairs where everyone seemed to be walking on eggshells. Sarah's spending escalated dramatically. New car, a $65,000 BMW X5 because her 3-year-old Mercedes wasn't reliable anymore. Never mind that the Mercedes had only 35,000 miles and had never given us a single problem. Kitchen renovation, $45,000 for granite countertops and custom cabinets because our perfectly functional kitchen was dated and embarrassing when friends come over. Wardrobe updates became a monthly occurrence. Designer handbags that cost more than most people's mortgage payments. Shoes that she wore once and forgot about. Jewelry for special occasions that never seemed to happen, or at least never seemed to include me. Spa weekends with her sister became spa weeks at luxury resorts. The credit card bills were staggering. $8,000 one month at Nordstrom. $12,000 the next month spread across Saks, Neiman Marcus, and boutiques I'd never heard of. When I questioned the expenses, she'd explode like I'd insulted her entire family. I gave up my career for this family. I could have been somebody if I hadn't sacrificed everything to raise your children and support your dreams. The irony was that her career had been an entry-level sales job at a plumbing supply company. She acted like she'd given up being CEO of a Fortune 500 company. I deserve to have nice things. All my friends have nice things. You're being controlling and cheap. The arguments always end.
And there it is, the feminist talking points. Listen, fellas, if you're dealing with somebody that's using the feminism quotes, phrases, and catchphrases, it's time to bounce. Because, you know, we get to the point where it's like,
what more do you want from me?
But I digress.
Ended the same way, with me apologizing and her getting whatever she wanted, plus a little extra for the emotional distress I'd caused by questioning her spending. Because apparently, questioning where our money goes makes me the bad guy. David's behavior changed too. Started making comments about how I was working too hard and should enjoy life more. Suggested I take more time off, let him handle more of the day-to-day operations. His wife Lisa seemed uncomfortable around Sarah at family gatherings, but I figured it was typical sister-in-law tension. The intimacy dried up. Sarah claimed she was tired, stressed, going through hormonal changes. Meanwhile, she looked better than she had in years. Working out 6 days a week, getting...
that part. The intimacy drying up. Let me explain something to y'all, fellas, especially some of y'all that's going through these sexless relationships and marriages. There's no such thing as a woman's intimacy no longer functioning or her losing her interest in dealing with you. Chances are her attention and her focus is elsewhere. Now, she might not necessarily be sleeping with that person, but there's a person out there that she fantasizes about or she's thinking about in regards to wanting to get her needs fulfilled. So don't ever buy that shit. It's time to start looking. It's time to start bouncing.
Facials, dressing like she was trying to impress someone. Gee, I wonder who that could have been. I threw myself deeper into work. Figured if I could just build the business bigger, make more money, everything would stabilize. Added an electrical division, bought 3 new service trucks, hired 8 more technicians. Revenue hit $4.8 million in 2022. None of it mattered. The more successful I became, the more distant my family grew.
And there's another thing. Too many times, fellas think, you know, we think we can throw money at a problem. You are already a millionaire, champ. Multi-millionaire. Throwing more money into the situation is not going to make your wife fall back in love with you. It's not going to create a better environment for you and your family, especially when they see you as the ATM. You got to recognize when it's time. You got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. All right? It's the old Kenny Rogers. Y'all better, you know, peep game.
It's almost like they were planning something behind my back. 3 months ago, Emma asked to borrow my iPad for a school project. Said hers was charging. I went to her room to grab it from her desk and knocked over a stack of textbooks. Behind them was an old Android phone I didn't recognize. Curiosity killed the cat, but satisfaction brought him back. The phone was unlocked. Recent messages showed it belonged to Sarah, apparently her burner phone for coordinating with David, What I found in those messages destroyed 20 years of marriage and 8 years of trusting my brother. They weren't just sleeping together. They were planning my complete destruction. 2 years of messages between Sarah and David, detailed discussions about how I was holding them back and how they deserved to be together, plans about what they'd do once I was out of the picture, conversations about my workaholic personality and how I'd never see it coming because he's always been too trusting. Sarah called me that stubborn plumber in multiple messages, said I was too stupid to notice what's happening under my own nose, and too boring to keep any woman interested long term. David referred to me as the money machine, good for funding their lifestyle, but not smart enough to realize I was being used.
And see, that's... Do you know how invested he just became and how all the dots started lining up? Do you realize that this dude read through 2 years of text messages on a burner phone? That shit probably had like old digital script. And he's sitting there trying, he's going through the messages back and forth. But people already handled it though. People already handled it. You know, his wife ain't shitting either as his brother, but people already handled it.
One message thread that particularly stung was from last Christmas. While I was working an emergency call on Christmas Eve, a burst pipe at a nursing home that would have left elderly residents without heat. They were texting about how pathetic it was that I chose work over family and how I deserved to be alone. I was literally out in freezing weather, on my hands and knees in a crawl space, making sure old people didn't freeze to death, and they were mocking me for it. Well, isn't that just precious?
And they're planning his downfall. Like, they're literally plotting his downfall. Like, they're not just happy with just having this little side affair or whatever. They got an end game with this, which is why, fellas, you got to stop letting little things go. And I ain't saying you should always react in response, but your antennas should definitely be up when you see certain things happening.
The photos were worse. Sarah in lingerie I'd never seen. David in my office after hours. Both of them in my bed. The bed I'd bought with money from 16-hour days and bloodied knuckles. But the worst part? The kids knew. Marcus had been covering for them, deleting security footage from our home system when David came over during work hours. I'd installed that system to protect my family, and my own son was using it to betray me. Emma created elaborate stories about Sarah's whereabouts. Mom's at book club. Mom went shopping with Aunt Linda. Mom's having coffee with Mrs. Henderson from down the street. All lies, all coordinated, all delivered with the innocent smile of a 14-year-old who should have been worried about algebra homework, not covering up her mother's adultery.
Yo, this is nasty work right here. You know, when you start seeing family doing this, especially your children, your children, like, hold the fuck, like, yo, man, this wild turkey out here. At some point, this shit had to be heartbreaking. But anyway.
They had a group chat. Sarah, David, Marcus, and Emma. Code names for everything. I was the boss. David was Uncle D. Their meetings were study sessions. My business trips were golden opportunities. My late nights at work were free passes. The messages from my children hurt worse than anything Sarah and David had written. Marcus asking, is the coast clear? When I was running late from a job site. Emma sending, all clear, B is working late again, when I called to say I'd be home after 8 p.m. My own children were accomplices in my wife's affair with my brother. Let that sink in for a moment. These were kids I'd taught to ride bikes, helped with homework, taken to baseball games and dance recitals. I'd worked myself to exhaustion to give them everything they wanted, and they repaid me by helping destroy our family. There were messages about my personal habits, my appearance, even intimate details about our marriage that Sarah had no right to share. They mocked my work clothes, laughed about my boring stories from job sites, made fun of my attempts to spend family time by suggesting weekend activities. One particularly painful thread was from Father's Day last year. While I was grilling burgers for what I thought was a nice family celebration, they were texting about how fake the whole thing felt and counting down the minutes until they could get back to normal. I'd been so proud that day, thinking about how blessed I was to have such a close family. I sat in Emma's room for 2 hours, screenshotting everything, bank account information they'd been discussing, even their timeline for getting me out of their lives. They'd been planning to push me toward a breakdown so Sarah could divorce me and take half of everything. Then she and David could be together openly. The final message I screenshot was from Sarah to David, sent just 3 days earlier. Jay is getting suspicious about the expenses. We need to be more careful. Maybe it's time to make our move. They were planning to destroy me financially and personally. Make me lose everything I'd built, then swoop in to take control. When I finally stood up, my hands weren't shaking. I felt eerily calm, like everything suddenly made perfect sense. I put the phone back exactly where I found it, walked downstairs, and found my family eating dinner. Sarah smiled brightly and asked about my day. David was there, drinking my soda, joking about a client who tried to negotiate our prices down. Clients think plumbing work is easy, he said, laughing. They don't understand the skill involved. No, I agreed, looking directly at him. They really don't. Marcus asked if I could help him with his college applications that weekend. Emma wanted money for a school ski trip. Sarah mentioned she'd booked us a dinner reservation for Saturday night at the new steakhouse downtown. I played along perfectly. Smiled, nodded, made plans I knew I'd never keep.
See, this is the whole, and this is why, you know, I titled this episode the Kaiser Sose, right? The Kaiser Sose episode. I don't know. But anybody ever, if y'all remember, there was a movie out about a decade ago or so, maybe a little longer than that, called The Usual Suspects, probably a little longer than that. And in the movie, there was a scene where this international gangster, Kaiser Sosa, he came home from work or came home from wherever, and these Hungarian gangsters was in his house, and they had his family hostage. And one of the things they did was, I think they killed one of his children to let him know that they weren't playing around. But the cold shit is what happened next. So Kaiser Sose went and killed his wife and the other two children. And then he killed two of the gangsters. And he told the last one, let everybody know I'm coming for him. That was his origin story. This right here, that was Black Pill. That's extremely Black Pill. This right here is he's moved. He skipped right over Red Pill. He skipped right over Red Pill and went into Black Pill. And one day when I have time, I'll explain the whole concept of the pills.
Inside, I was already planning their destruction. That night, I started planning the most important project of my life, the systematic demolition of everyone who'd betrayed me. Step one was intelligence gathering. I couldn't let them know I knew, so I had to be smart about collecting evidence. Over the next month, I documented everything, used my work phone to photograph the burner phone's contents every time I could get access to it, set up a hidden camera in my home office after noticing David had been going through my files. Turned out he'd been photographing financial documents and client contracts, created a detailed timeline of their affair using credit card statements and security footage they'd missed. The footage was particularly damning. David's car in my driveway at odd hours, him entering through the back door like he owned the place, Sarah greeting him in clothing she'd change out of before I got home. Sarah made it easy. Her arrogance was staggering. She'd book hotel rooms on our joint credit card, claiming they were for girls' weekends, that never included any girls. The hotel charges were always for single occupancy, always on days when David had also taken personal time from work. She bought lingerie and charged it to our account, lingerie I never saw her wear. Even got David expensive gifts and listed them as family presents on the credit card statements. One particularly insulting purchase was a $300 silk tie she bought him for Boss's Day. Apparently, I was footing the bill for gifts to celebrate my brother, taking over my role in more ways than one. Because apparently, I was too stupid to read credit card statements. The woman who'd called me a financial genius for building a multi-million dollar business somehow thought I couldn't figure out basic math. David was equally sloppy. Used my company vehicles for personal trips to meet Sarah. I had GPS tracking on all the trucks, so I could see exactly where he went and when. Charged romantic dinners to his company credit card, dinners that happened on the same nights Sarah claimed to be at book club or yoga workshops. Had lengthy personal phone calls during work hours that my office phone system recorded. Even used company letterhead for personal notes. I found copies in his desk when I came in early one Saturday. Love letters written on my business stationery, using equipment I'd paid for. During hours I was paying him to work. The kid's involvement was the most painful to document. Marcus had been deleting security footage for 18 months. I recovered most of it from the cloud backup he didn't know existed. Emma had created fake social media posts to give Sarah alibis. Photo.
And this is the another part, too. Everybody was sloppy, but the messiest part is incorporating kids who didn't have a full understanding of the depth of their lies, their betrayals, and what it would cost them. I think that part in there is something that, this is why I say this is Black Pill. And for those of you who want just a simple definition, you know, Red Pill is like seeing the lens, seeing the world for the truth that it is, similar to, you know, like the Matrix, right? Seeing the real world, opening your eyes to the real world is not pretty, but this is the reality. Black Pill is people moving on being extremely pragmatic. In other words, there's very few emotions involved in any of the decisions that are made. It's simply deductive reasoning.
Photos from months earlier reposted with current dates to make it look like Sarah was at various events when she was actually with David. My son had learned to lie like a professional. My daughter had become a master manipulator at 14. Their mother had turned them into criminals. Step two was financial preparation. I couldn't just disappear like some Reddit fantasy. I had employees, contracts, legal obligations, but I could restructure everything to protect what I'd built. Started by consulting with three different attorneys. Learned that adultery still matters in our state, especially when it involves family members and financial fraud. The evidence I'd gathered wasn't just proof of cheating, it was proof of conspiracy. Created a new LLC in Wyoming, completely separate from my main business. Started moving personal assets into the new entity. Sold my classic Mustang and motorcycle privately. Deposited the cash in a new account at a different bank. Liquidated some investments, claiming I wanted to diversify when Sarah asked. She didn't ask often. Sarah had stopped paying attention to our finances years earlier, except when she wanted to spend money. As long as her credit cards worked and her shopping budget remained unlimited, she didn't care where the money came from. Step three was business restructuring. I couldn't just fire my brother without cause. He wasn't technically an employee in the traditional sense, more like a partner. But I could document his failures and create a paper trail that would justify removing him. Promoted two of my most trusted senior technicians to operations managers. Started giving them more responsibility, better pay, equity stakes in future projects. Built redundancy into every system so the company could function without David. Meanwhile, I documented every one of David's failures. His habit of disappearing during important client meetings. His inability to handle technical aspects of the business. His tendency to make promises to clients without consulting me first. I also discovered David had been skimming. Small amounts but consistent. Using company credit cards for personal expenses, claiming fake business meals, even billing personal car repairs to the company. I let it continue while documenting everything. Step four was the hardest part, pretending everything was normal while my family planned my destruction. For 2 months, I lived a double life. During the day, I was Jake, successful business owner and devoted family man. At night, I was a man preparing for war. Sarah's behavior became
Black men, did you hear that? He was a man preparing for war. You got it, y'all Negroes need to pay. I recognize.
Increasingly bold. She'd come home from yoga with disheveled hair and suspicious marks on her neck. Started receiving expensive gifts, jewelry, handbags, perfume, that she claimed were from her sister or girls' trip splurges. The receipts I found showed David had bought everything. She became more demanding and cruel. Complained constantly about our house being outdated compared to her friends' homes. Wanted a kitchen renovation that would cost $90,000. Insisted we needed a vacation home in Colorado because successful people have multiple properties. When I suggested we should be more conservative with spending, she exploded. I didn't marry you to live like we're poor. I could have married anyone, but I chose you because I thought you had ambition. Anyone? I asked. Men with real money were interested in me, she said coldly. Investment bankers, doctors, lawyers. I settled for a tradesman because I thought you'd become something more. A tradesman. After I'd built a multi-million-dollar business, bought her everything she'd ever wanted, and worked myself half to death to fund her lifestyle, I was still just a tradesman in her mind. How charming. David's mask slipped too. Started making comments about how I was holding everyone back, with my old-fashioned methods. Suggested we should expand faster, take on more debt, hire cheaper workers. His ideas would have bankrupted us within 2 years. He also began acting like he owned half the business. Jake, I need you to handle the Johnson site personally. I've got meetings all afternoon. Jake, can you stay late and finish the inventory? I promised Lisa I'd be home for dinner. The meetings were with Sarah. The dinner with Lisa was actually dinner with Sarah. I knew this because I'd started tracking his location using the company vehicle's GPS system. Marcus started getting more aggressive about college planning. Dad, I need you to co-sign for student loans. The tuition at state is $28,000 a year. What he didn't know was that I'd already discovered he'd been accepted to three different schools, but was getting advice from David about which one to choose. Emma became manipulative in ways that shocked me. Daddy, Mom says you've been stressed about money. Maybe you should retire early and let Uncle David run the business. At 14, she was pushing her father to give up everything he'd built. The final straw came 6 weeks ago. I came home early from a job site due to equipment problems and found David's car in my driveway. Not hidden, not parked discreetly, right in my driveway like he belonged there. I sat in my truck for 10 minutes, listening to music and checking emails, giving them time to realize I was home. When I walked into my house, David was fully dressed, sitting at my kitchen table with Sarah, having coffee. Emma was doing homework nearby. Hey, bro, David said casually. Just stop by to check on Sarah and the kids. You know how Lisa worries when I'm working late. Sarah was wearing a silk robe at 3 p.m. on a Tuesday. Her hair was wet from a shower. She looked me straight in the eye and smiled. Honey, you're home early. Everything okay? The audacity was breathtaking. They were so confident in my stupidity that they didn't even bother with a good cover story. Just some equipment issues, I said. Nothing major. Good, David said, standing up. Well, I should get going. Thanks for the coffee, Sarah. And don't worry about what we discussed. Everything will work out. He hugged me goodbye, actually hugged me, before leaving. His wedding ring was in his pants pocket. Sarah's lipstick was slightly smudged. Emma looked up from her homework and smiled innocently. How was work today, Daddy? That night, I made my final decision. They weren't just cheating on me. They were insulting my intelligence while they did it. My own brother thought I was too stupid, too trusting, Too pathetic to ever figure it out. Time to show them how wrong they were. Last week, I put my plan into motion. The beauty of running a technical business is that everything has to be perfectly timed and executed. One mistake and the whole project fails.
I just want to go back to something real quick. His brother was in the house. You see, the wife had to take a shower because she had to wash that sex off of her. The brother was sitting there, probably his balls was simmering with all of her juices all over the place. Nasty work.
Same principle applies to destroying people who've betrayed you. Phase one, financial devastation. I'd spent months moving assets out of joint accounts and into protected entities. Sarah never noticed because I maintained the same amount in our checking account. I just replaced our savings with debt, took out a business line of credit secured by company assets, used it to fund her spending while moving our actual money to safety. Monday morning, I closed all joint credit cards and bank accounts. Sarah discovered this when her card was declined at Nordstrom. She called me screaming. What the heck did you do to our accounts? Consolidated them for better rates. I lied smoothly. New cards should arrive Wednesday. They didn't arrive Wednesday because I'd never ordered them. Phase two, destroying David. Tuesday, I called an emergency meeting with my attorney and accountant. Presented them with evidence of David's embezzlement and misuse of company resources. Had them draft termination papers and a demand for repayment of stolen funds. David showed up to work Wednesday morning to find his access codes changed, his office cleaned out, and a security guard waiting to escort him off the property. His company vehicle was in the parking lot, with a repo man attaching it to a tow truck. He called me 17 times. I answered on the 18th call. What the heck, Jake? You can't just kick me out. We're family. Family doesn't steal from each other, I said calmly. Check your termination letter. It includes documentation of $47,000 in embezzled funds and misused company resources. You can't prove anything. I have receipts, David. Photos, credit card statements.
Wait a minute. Getting caught stealing was bad enough. This dude didn't even deny it. He just said you can't prove it. Like, what the fuck? Yeah, he deserved another one.
EPS logs from company vehicles. Should I send copies to Lisa? Or would you prefer to tell her yourself that you've been stealing from your brother to fund your affair with his wife? The line went quiet. You're insane, he whispered. No, I'm thorough. Oh, and David? The IRS will be contacting you about unreported income. Might want to get a good accountant. Phase three, the children learn consequences. Marcus's college fund was in my name only, a 529 plan I'd been funding for 12 years. Wednesday afternoon, I liquidated it and transferred the money to my protected LLC. $180,000 gone in one transaction. Emma's car fund got the same treatment. She'd been expecting a new BMW for her 16th birthday next month. That $45,000 just became operating capital for my new business venture. Thursday morning, I canceled their cell phone plans, removed them from my health insurance as dependents, and closed the credit card accounts they used for gas and expenses.
Remember when I said the Kaiser Sose effect? This is what I'm talking about. My man, he might as well. He literally economically castrated his entire family. All right.
Marcus discovered this when he tried to buy lunch at school, and his card was declined. Emma found out when her phone was shut off during third period. They both called Sarah, panicked. Sarah called me furious. You're punishing the children for our problems. I'm teaching them that actions have consequences, I replied. They chose to help you betray me. Now they get to see what life looks like without my financial support. They're just kids. Marcus is 17, old enough to delete security footage and lie to his father. Emma is 14, old enough to create fake alibis for her mother's affair. If they're old enough to commit crimes, they're old enough to face justice. Sarah hung up on me. An hour later, I received a text from Marcus. Dad, please call me. I need to explain. I didn't call back. Phase four, Sarah's reality check. Friday morning was beautiful. I woke up early, made coffee, and drove to work like any other day. Left Sarah sleeping in our bed, the bed where she'd been intimate with my brother dozens of times while I worked to pay for her lifestyle. At exactly 9 a.m., while Sarah was at her yoga class, the moving company arrived at our house. I'd hired them to remove and store all of my personal belongings. Furniture I'd bought before marriage, tools, electronics, my clothes, anything that was legally mine. I also had them remove everything I'd bought for the kids. Their bedroom furniture, computers, gaming systems, sports equipment, all purchased with my money, all technically my property.
My man went scorched earth. Crazy work.
They were efficient. By noon, the house looked like it had been burglarized. Sarah came home to empty rooms and a note on the kitchen counter. I know everything. Divorce papers will be served Monday. Don't contact me directly. All communication through attorneys only. My phone started ringing immediately. I was already 200 miles away, driving toward my new life. That was 3 months ago. I'm writing this final chapter from my cabin in Montana, where I've been doing specialized HVAC installations for luxury mountain homes. The work is challenging, the pay is excellent, and nobody here knows about my past. My attorney handled the divorce proceedings. With the evidence I'd gathered, it was basically unopposed. Sarah got exactly what she was entitled to under state law. Nothing more, nothing less. The house was sold to pay off the debts she'd racked up. Remember, I'd replaced our savings with borrowed money. After legal fees and debt settlement, She walked away with about $15,000. David's life imploded completely. His wife, Lisa, divorced him when she discovered the affair and the embezzlement. She moved back to her hometown with their kids. The IRS investigation I'd triggered uncovered 3 years of tax evasion. He's currently facing federal charges and owes over $200,000 in back taxes and penalties. He tried to start his own plumbing business but couldn't get bonded due to his legal problems. Last I heard, he was working as a day laborer for $15 an hour. The kids learned what life looks like without daddy's money. Marcus had to take out massive student loans to attend community college instead of the four-year university he'd planned on. Emma got a part-time job at a fast food restaurant to pay for her own phone and clothes. But here's where the story gets really interesting. 2 weeks ago, I received a phone call from Sarah. She'd somehow tracked down my new number, probably hired a private investigator with money she couldn't afford to spend. Jake, please, I need to talk to you. I almost hung up, but curiosity won. You have 5 minutes. I made a terrible mistake, she said, crying. I was confused, going through some kind of midlife crisis. I never meant for things to go so far. For 2 years? I know how it looks, but I do love you. I always loved you. David convinced me that you didn't appreciate me, that you were holding me back. I see now that he was just using me. Oh, how the tables have turned. What do you want, Sarah? I want my family back. I want to come home. I laughed. Actually laughed out loud. Home to what? The house is sold. The kids hate you for involving them in your lies. I've started a new life 1,800 miles away. I'll move anywhere. I'll do anything. Please, Jake. I can't survive on my own. You should have thought about that before you called me that stubborn plumber in your text.
And see, there it is. There it is, right there. It wasn't that she loved him. She just realized that she lost her money ticket. She lost her meal ticket. And fellas, these are some of the things that you know, we're going to have to really take into consideration as we move forward. First of all, never lead with your wallet. Never lead with your wallet. Now, I understand that she was with him from the beginning, but even still, she wasn't fully committed. She wasn't fully committed to the lifestyle. She wasn't fully committed, not to life. She wasn't fully committed to supporting him. All right. Long story short, fellas. You know, it's crazy out here. So you got to make sure that you're on top of your game. And this is a black pill response. Alright, so with that said, family, I'm cutting this one down. Y'all know what it is, man. Stay healthy, stay safe, and remember, war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And I'm out of here.